ولئن أذقنا الإنسان منا رحمة ثم نزعناها منه إنه ليئوس كفور.
If we ever favor man with our mercy and then take it away from him, he becomes utterly desperate, totally ungrateful.
وَلَئِنْ أَذَقْنَاهُ نَعْمَاءَ بَعْدَ ضَرَّاءَ مَسَّتْهُ لَيَقُولَنَّ ذَهَبَ السَّيِّئَاتُ عَنِّي إِنَّهُ لَفَرِحٌ فَخُورٌ.
And if we let him taste favor after harm has touched him, he says, "All my ills are gone." And he suddenly becomes exultant and boastful. All my ills are gone, and he suddenly becomes exultant and boastful.
There are weaknesses in human beings which they themselves can observe if only they engage in self-introspection. It is a measure of man's shallowness and short-sightedness that whenever he has power and wealth, he brags and swaggers. In times of prosperity, he becomes incapable of even imagining that his spring can suffer a winter. The result is that whenever he is afflicted with adversity, he is driven to utter despair, becomes an incarnation of grief and despondency, so much so that at times he tries to make himself forget his misfortunes by flinging abuses and taunts at God. But when these bad days are over and good days return, he once again becomes boastful. Drunk with success and prosperity, he returns to his old intemperate revelries. Why has this despicable trait of man been mentioned at this point? The purpose is to subtly remind the Meccan unbelievers of the warning the Prophet, peace be upon him, gave them while they enjoyed security and well-being. He warned them that if they continued to disobey God, they would be struck by a severe punishment. On hearing this warning, they had burst into laughter and in effect said to the Prophet, peace be upon him, "Are you blind to the bounties that are being lavished upon us? Do you not see that the standards of our greatness are fluttering all around? What makes you, then, daydream that a scourge is about to be let loose upon us?" This disparaging response to the Prophet's sincere counsel and admonition was an abject expression of man's despicable trait referred to above. God has deferred the infliction of punishment and granted the unbelievers a reprieve in order that they may mend their ways. They, however, failed to seize the opportunity on account of the illusion that their prosperity would endure.
إِلَّا الَّذِينَ صَبَرُوا وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ أُولَئِكَ لَهُمْ مَغْفِرَةٌ وَأَجْرٌ كَبِيرٌ.
Except those who are patient and act righteously, such shall have Allah's forgiveness and a great reward. Except those who are patient and act righteously.
This brings out another aspect of patience, a quality in sharp contrast to that undignified trait just mentioned. Those who are patient exhibit poise and equanimity in the midst of vicissitudes of fortune. They do not allow changes of fortune to change their attitude and character. If circumstances are favorable and they enjoy wealth, power, and fame, that does not make them power drunk. Again, when they are visited with adversity, their dignity is not crushed out of all existence. Whenever God puts them to any test, be it that of prosperity or of adversity, they maintain their dignified posture of moderation. Whatever the circumstance, their mettle never fails them.
Such shall have Allah's forgiveness and a great reward.
God forgives the sins of those who are patient and do good, and He also rewards them amply for their good deeds.
فَلَعَلَّكَ تَارِكٌ بَعْضَ مَا يُوحَى إِلَيْكَ وَضَائِقٌ بِهِ صَدْرُكَ أَن يَقُولُوا لَوْلَا أُنْزِلَ عَلَيْهِ كَنْزٌ أَوْ جَاءَ مَعَهُ مَلَكٌ إنما أنت نذير والله على كل شيء وكيل.
O Messenger, let it not happen that you omit to expound a portion of what was revealed to you. And do not be distressed that they will say, why was a treasure not bestowed upon him? Or why did no angel accompany him? For you are merely a warner, whereas Allah has control over everything.
In order to fully understand the verse, one should take mental note of the circumstantial background of its revelation. At the time this verse was revealed, Makkah was the center of the Quraysh, who had a preponderant influence over the whole of Arabia because of their religious prestige, wealth, trade, and political power. At the very moment when the Quraysh were at the zenith of their power and authority, a Meccan, the Prophet, peace be upon him, stood up and vehemently denounced the religion of which they were custodians as a bundle of ignorance and error. He also condemned the social system of which they were standard bearers, calling it rotten to the core. He also warned them of an impending punishment from God. He emphasized that the only way to avert this punishment was to accept the true faith and righteous order of life which he had expounded to them on God's behalf. The only thing which this man had to make people believe he had been appointed by God to communicate his message was the purity of his character and the utter reasonableness of his teaching. In addition, there was apparently nothing in the milieu except the deep-rooted wrongs which had corrupted the religious, moral, and social life of the Quraysh that would suggest that God's punishment was close at hand. On the contrary, all portents indicated that the Meccans enjoyed God's plenteous favors and of the deities which they worshipped. Thus, apparently, they had every reason to believe that they were on the right path. If, under such circumstances, someone in the manner of the Prophet, peace be upon him, were to strongly denounce the prevalent way of life, it was hardly surprising that all except a very few right-thinking people who had access to the truth would become his inveterate enemies. This enmity found its expression in a myriad of forms. Some people sought to suppress the Prophet, peace be upon him, by resorting to harsh methods of repression. Others tried to undermine his position by false accusations and vicious propaganda. Some discouraged him with their bigoted indifference and frowning, while others resorted to jests, pranks, taunts, and ridicule in order to dismiss his message as absurd. It is clear that such a hostile attitude would have been heartbreaking for the Prophet, peace be upon him. This would have been especially so since the hostility persisted for several years. It is under these trying circumstances that God consoled the Prophet, peace be upon him. He comforted him by saying that it is people of low mettle who turn boastful in prosperity and become downcast and despondent in adversity. A worthy person in God's sight pursues righteousness with patience and courage. Hence, the Prophet, peace be upon him, should not be shaken by the bigoted opposition, the aversion, the ridicule and mockery, and the foolish objections which he was subjected to by the unbelievers. On the contrary, he should have no hesitation, despite all the opposition he faced, in calling people to the truth revealed by God. In fact, he should not even permit a moment's reluctance in proclaiming the truth for fear that he would be ridiculed for propagating those teachings. Nor should he shrink from performing his duty to preach because some of those teachings would be too unpalatable for his people even to hear. For the main task of the Prophet, peace be upon him, was to continuously state the truth, uncompromisingly and fearlessly and regardless of those who accepted it and those who did not. Once this duty had been performed, it was pointless worrying whether it would be of any effect. In that regard, the Prophet, peace be upon him, ought to place his reliance entirely on God.
أَمْ يَقُولُونَ افْتَرَاهُ قُلْ فَأْتُوا بِعَشْرِ سُوَرٍ مِثْلِهِ مُفْتَرَيَاتٍ وَادْعُوا مَنِ اسْتَطَعْتُمْ مِنْ دُونِ اللَّهِ إِن كُنْتُمْ صَادِقِينَ
Do they say, he has invented this book himself? Say, if that is so, bring 10 surahs the like of it of your composition and call upon all the deities you can other than Allah to your help. Do so if you are truthful.
فَإِنْ لَمْ يَسْتَجِيبُوا لَكُمْ فَاعْلَمُوا أَنَّمَا أُنْزِلَ بِعِلْمِ اللَّهِ وَأَنْ لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا هُوَ فَهَلْ أَنْتُمْ مُسْلِمُونَ.
Then, if your deities do not respond to your call for help, then feel assured that this book was revealed with the knowledge of Allah, and that there is no true God but Him. Will you then surrender to this truth, and that there is no true God but Him? Will you then surrender to this truth? The argument advanced here serves to establish the divine origin of the Quran as well as the oneness of God. The argument put succinctly is as follows. A. If the unbelievers thought that the Quran had been authored by some human being, then it ought to be possible for them to compose something which would be the like of it. Now, unbelievers claim that it is the Prophet, peace be upon him, a human being rather than God, who has produced the Quran. In such a case, it should be possible for them, for they too are human, to produce such a book. However, despite the repeated challenges for them to produce something like the Quran, no one, not even all of them combined, has succeeded in achieving it. The conclusion is quite evident. The book was revealed by God, and there is no question that it is the work of any human being. B. The Quran quite openly and vehemently denounced the deities which the unbelievers worshipped, and urged them to abandon these as they had no share in God's Godhead. The unbelievers were also asked to mobilize whom they wished, including their deities, provided they had any power to assist them in establishing the falsity of the Prophet's claim by producing a book equal to the Quran. But if at such a crucial stage their deities fail to come to their aid and do not grant them the power to produce something like the Quran, what then does that prove? Quite obviously, it proves that these so-called deities had neither the power nor even a shred of the attributes necessary for Godhead. The fact of their becoming deities was purely the work of a few human beings who had invested such weak mortal creatures with Godhead. Incidentally, this verse also establishes the fact that in terms of chronological sequence, the present surah, Hud, was revealed before Surah Yunus. For in the present surah, the unbelievers have been challenged to produce 10 surahs like the Quranic ones. Subsequently, after the unbelievers failed to do so, they were asked in Surah Yunus to produce just one surah like it.
من كان يريد الحياة الدنيا وزينتها نوفي إليهم أعمالهم فيها وهم فيها لا يبخسون.
Those who seek merely the present world and its adornment, we fully recompense them for their work in this world, and they are made to suffer no diminution in it concerning what is their due. Those who seek merely the present world and its adornment. What prompted this Quranic remark is the fact that the kind of people who rejected the message of the Quran, both in the time of the Prophet, peace be upon him, and subsequently, have one major characteristic in common. They are all steeped in worldliness. Many of the arguments which they advance in order to reject the Quran are probably afterthoughts, merely rationalized excuses for not accepting the truth. What lies at the root of these people's rejection is the hypothesis that everything other than this world and its gains are worthless, and that everyone should have the fullest opportunity to seize the optimum portion of worldly benefits.
أولئك الذين ليس لهم في الآخرة إلا النار وحبط ما صنعوا فيها وباطل ما كانوا يعملون.
They are the ones who shall have nothing in the hereafter except fire. There they shall come to know that their deeds in the world have come to naught, and that whatever they have done is absolutely useless. They are the ones who shall have nothing in the hereafter except fire. Those who keep their attention focused on this world and its benefits will reap worldly benefits in proportion to their efforts. However, since such people have not been concerned with, nor did they direct their efforts to achieving success and well-being in the hereafter, there is no reason to suppose that their efforts aimed at merely achieving worldly benefits will also embrace the benefits of the hereafter. A person can expect that his action in this world will be of some benefit to him in the next life only if he has engaged himself in tasks which are beneficial in the next life as well. This can be illustrated by example. A person wants to have a stately mansion to live in, and to that end he adopts the means that are ordinarily adopted for its construction. Now, if he has adopted the requisite means, he will indeed have a stately mansion. Even if such a person happens to be an unbeliever, this fact will not prevent the mansion from being constructed. However, when such a person breathes his last, he will have to leave behind that mansion and its belongings, and will be able to take nothing of it to the next world. Now, if he has not taken the necessary steps to obtain a mansion in the next world, he will simply not obtain any such mansion there. Only those who perform deeds which, according to God's law, would make him deserve a mansion in the next world will be able to have it. One might be inclined to say, this line of argument at best leads to the conclusion that such a person who cares only for this world should be denied a mansion in the next world. But does that also call for consigning him in the next world to hellfire? On this point, the Quran explains on more than one occasion that all those who work in total disregard of the hereafter necessarily engage in acts which lead them to end up in a heap of fire in the next life rather than in a mansion in paradise.
أَفَمَنْ كَانَ عَلَى بَيِّنَةٍ مِّنْ رَبِّهِ وَيَتْلُوهُ شَاهِدٌ مِّنْهُ وَمِنْ قَبْلِهِ كِتَابُ مُوسَى إِمَامًا وَرَحْمَةً أُولَئِكَ يُؤْمِنُونَ بِهِ وَمَنْ يَكْفُرْ بِهِ مِنَ الْأَحْزَابِ فَالنَّارُ مَوْعِدُهُ فَلَا تَكُ فِي مِرْيَةٍ مِّنْهُ إِنَّهُ الْحَقُّ مِنْ رَبِّكَ وَلَكِنَّ أَكْثَرَ النَّاسِ لَا يُؤْمِنُونَ.
Can it happen that he who takes his stand on a clear evidence from his Lord, subsequently followed by a witness from him in his support? And prior to that, the book of Moses, peace be upon him, was revealed as a guide and a mercy. Would even he deny the truth in the manner of those who adore the life of this world? Rather, such men are bound to believe in it. The fire shall be the promised resort of the groups that disbelieve. So be in no doubt about it, for this indeed is the truth from your Lord, although most people do not believe. Can it happen that he who takes his stand on a clear evidence from his Lord? This shows that even apart from revelation, there is ample evidence in man's own self, in the structure of the heavens and the earth, and in the order that prevails in the universe to prove that God is the only creator, master, lord, and sovereign of the universe. The evidence referred to above also inclines man to believe that the present life will be followed by another one, in which man will be required to render an account of his deeds and wherein he might be requited, subsequently followed by a witness from him in his support. The witness from him is the Quran, the testimony of the natural phenomena combined with that provided by man's own self had already created in man the disposition to affirm the truths mentioned earlier. All that was further reinforced by the Quran, which came as reassurance that what he was predisposed to believe in was indeed true. Rather, such men are bound to believe in it. In the present context, the verse means that those who are overly infatuated with the allurements of a worldly life will be inclined to reject the message of the Quran. Distinguishable from these are those who take full note of the testimony furnished by their own beings and by the structure and order prevailing in the universe in support of God's unity. This testimony was further reinforced by the heavenly books revealed before the Quran. How could such persons close their eyes to such overwhelming testimony as this and join their voice with those of the unbelievers. This verse clearly indicates that even before the Quran was revealed, the Prophet, peace be upon him, had reached the stage of belief in the unseen. We have seen in Al-An'am, C 675, the case of Abraham, peace be upon him. Before being appointed a prophet, Abraham, peace be upon him, was led by a careful observation of the natural phenomena to knowledge of God's unity. Likewise, the present verse makes it clear that by his reflection, the Prophet, peace be upon him, had been led to believe in the unseen even before the Quran was revealed. Subsequently, when the Quran was revealed, it not only confirmed what he had already become inclined to accept, but also provided definite knowledge about it.
وَمَنْ أَظْلَمُ مِمَّنِ افْتَرَى عَلَى اللَّهِ كَذِبًا أُولَئِكَ يُعْرَضُونَ عَلَى رَبِّهِمْ وَيَقُولُ الْأَشْهَادُ هَؤُلَاءِ الَّذِينَ كَذَبُوا عَلَى رَبِّهِمْ أَلَا لَعْنَةُ اللَّهِ عَلَى الظَّالِمِينَ.
And who is a greater wrongdoer than he who invents a lie against Allah? Such men will be set forth before their Lord, and witnesses will say, "These are the ones who lied against their Lord. Lo, Allah's curse be upon the wrongdoers." And who is a greater wrongdoer than he who invents a lie against Allah? To invent a lie against God consists of stating that beings other than God also have a share with God in His Godhead, that like God they are also entitled to be served and worshipped by God's creatures. Inventing a lie against God also consists of stating that God is not concerned with providing guidance to His creatures, that He did not raise prophets for that purpose, that He rather left men free to behave as they pleased. Inventing a lie against God also consists of stating that God created human beings by way of jest and sport, and that He will not have them render an account to Him, and that He will not requite them for their deeds. Lo, Allah's curse be upon the wrongdoers. Such a proclamation would be made on the Day of Judgment.
الذين يصدون عن سبيل الله ويبغونها عوجا وهم بالآخرة هم كافرون.
Upon those who bar people from the way of Allah and seek in it crookedness and disbelieve in the hereafter. Upon those, this is a parenthetical statement. That is, that God's curse will be proclaimed in the hereafter against those who are guilty of the crimes mentioned, who bar people from the way of Allah and seek in it crookedness. Such persons do not like the straight way being expounded to them. They would rather have the straight way rendered crooked by altering it under the influence of lust, prejudice, fancy, and superstition. It is only after the way that was once straight has been rendered crooked that they will be willing to accept it.
أولئك لم يكونوا معجزين في الأرض وما كان لهم من دون الله من أولياء يضاعف لهم العذاب ما كانوا يستطيعون السمع وما كانوا يبصرون.
They had no power to frustrate Allah's design in the earth, nor did they have any protectors against Allah. Their chastisement will be doubled. They were unable to hear, nor could they see. They had no power to frustrate Allah's design in the earth. This again refers to what will happen in the next life. Their chastisement will be doubled. They will suffer punishment for being in error and for misleading others and leaving behind a legacy of error and misguidance for coming generations.
أُولَٰئِكَ الَّذِينَ خَسِرُوا أَنفُسَهُمْ وَضَلَّ عَنْهُمْ مَا كَانُوا يَفْتَرُونَ.
They caused utter loss to themselves and all that they had invented failed them.
They caused utter loss to themselves, and all that they had invented failed them.
All their conjectures regarding God, the universe, and their own selves will prove to be absolutely baseless in the next life. Similarly, the notions they entertained about the help and support they would receive from those they considered to be either their deities or their intercessors with God or their patrons will prove to be false. Likewise, it will become obvious that all their notions about the afterlife were utterly untrue.
لا جرم أنهم في الآخرة هم الأخسرون.
Doubtlessly, they shall be the greatest losers in the hereafter.
إن الذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات وأخبتوا إلى ربهم أولئك أصحاب الجنة.
As for those who believed and acted righteously and dedicated themselves totally to their Lord, they are the people of paradise, and there they shall abide forever. They are the people of paradise, and there they shall abide forever. This concludes the account about the hereafter.
مثل الفريقين كالأعمى والأصم والبصير والسميع هل يستويان مثلا أفلا تذكرون.
The example of the two parties is that one is blind and deaf, and the other capable of seeing and hearing. Can the two be equals? Will you then not heed? And the other capable of seeing and hearing, can the two be equals? Can the attitude and ultimate end of both these types of people be the same? Obviously, he who fails to see the right way and ignores the instruction of the guide who directs him to the right way will necessarily stumble and meet with some terrible mishap. However, he who perceives the right way and follows the instructions of his guide will reach his destination and reach it safely. The same difference is found between the two parties mentioned here. One of these carefully observes the realities of the universe and pays heed to the teachings of God's messengers. The other party, however, neither uses their eyes properly to perceive God's signs nor pays heed to his messengers. The behavior of the two parties is, therefore, bound to be different. And when their behavior is different, there is no reason to believe that their ultimate end will be identical.